Hare Krishna, our very great fortune once again to hear His Grace Vamshi Vadan Prabhuji addressing the Bhakti Shastri devotees in Sri Dham Mayapur, and this is day 4 of unit 2. We are going with chapter 8 and 9 today. This is 26th of December 2013. This is the morning session. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manovishnam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsya Shri Rupam Sarvajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Dalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Prachadine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauratvishe Namaha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Gopa Taru Vyasha Vrabha Sandhu Vyahe Vacha Vijayanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastavi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So welcome once again to the Bhakti Shastri class. So once again a quick revision of yesterday's class. Some few important points. And we would like to encourage those who have not contributed so far to kindly contribute. So if there are no volunteers, then we will request someone to volunteer. And those whose hands are up, sure enough. Okay, rather than Prabhu.
Yesterday you explained like what is the difference between Sukriti and Punya.
Okay.
And you explained three different types of Sukriti.
Yes.
Bhoga Unmukhi Sukriti.
Yes.
Moksha Unmukhi Sukriti.
Yes.
And Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, fine, thank you. Somebody would like to just... Okay, we won't go into this discussion on Sukriti. Okay. Fine, some other important points from the chapter. Yes, Prabhu.
Mm-hmm. So
okay, fine. So Arjuna began by asking 8 questions, and then we discussed on the answers to those 8 questions. Okay, yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that remembering Krishna at the time of death
is not such an easy thing, some people think. Krishna should be deeply, deeply rooted in the heart, so that at the last moment we're not thinking about it. So commercial.
Yes. Thank you. Okay, Hanuman.
If Krishna is satisfied by our devotional practices, then he will give us the chance of remembering him twice or anything.
Yes, that's right. So if Krishna is pleased by our practices, then he will give us his own remembrance. Yes, sir.
And also the fourth sloka of the Yoga Sutra Bhakti.
Okay. 10 to 13. Okay. Okay, fine. Thank you. You already said something. Okay, yes, please.
Yeah, we are separated into group, two groups. And the other group was the big group of eternity and the external.
Yes.
And you are instead we stay from the external more,
yes,
so that our external will be more purified.
Yes, that's right. So basically we have that whole discussion on the internals and the externals of devotional service, and how by focusing on the internal consciousness, then the quality of the external activities also will improve, and thus one can advance in the practices of devotional service. Okay, my last point from Nityananda.
I thought the brief conversation about the origin of home was very
nice. Okay. So what was that?
Well, you wrote something down on the board, and I actually couldn't see it from here, so I didn't get it in my notebook. It was A, U, N, and what was the A?
Krishna, Radharani and Jivas.
Okay.
Yeah, fine. Thank you. Okay, so we ended our discussion with which was? Fourteenth verse. One of the important verses which is discussing pure devotional service. Okay. So we'll just recite this verse once again because it's an important verse. Let's recite this 14th verse again. Ananyacheta satatam yomam smarati nityashah tasyaham sulabha partha nitya yuktasya yoginah. For one who always remembers me without deviation, I am easy to obtain, O son of Pritha, because of his constant engagement in devotional service. We had a short discussion on that, and then we also read the second paragraph of Srila Prabhupada's purport speaking about how one can create Vrindavan anywhere. So Prabhupada is saying, some say that the devotee should remain in holy places like Vrindavan or some holy town where the Lord lived, but a pure devotee can live anywhere and create the atmosphere of Vrindavan by his devotional service. So I would like to have a brief discussion on this very important thing, and that is the Vrindavan atmosphere. So when we speak of this Vrindavan atmosphere, which the Prophet says one can create that anywhere, so it's not necessarily to be physically located in Vrindavan, but that atmosphere can be transported anywhere. Who's the best example for that?
Prabhupada.
Yes, Srila Prabhupada. Wherever he went, he transported that Vrindavan atmosphere. Satsarupa Maharaj writes in his Lilamrita how when Srila Prabhupada was living in the Bowery, such a degraded place, but even in that place, Srila Prabhupada created Vrindavan with all the drug addicts and the drunkards all around. But within that small place where Srila Prabhupada was staying, there was Vrindavan. So, what do we understand by Vrindavan consciousness? What is the hallmark or what are the features of this Vrindavan consciousness? Yes, Prabhu. Krishna's pastimes. Can you a little bit elaborate on that? What do you mean by Krishna's pastimes?
To give yourself an understanding and a loving and affectionate love for Krishna.
Okay, fine. So one is trying to develop love for Krishna. Yes, Rishi?
Always remember Krishna, never forget.
Okay, always trying to remember Krishna, not forget him. Yes, Abhishek?
Krishna is in the center of all the activities.
Yes, that's very important. Krishna is in the center of all of one's activities. As we find that was the Vrindavan, when Krishna was himself there. So we find all the cowherd boys, the cowherd girls, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, everyone, even the peacocks and the deer and the trees and the river Yamuna. Everyone was simply trying to please Krishna. So, how would the trees try to please Krishna? Yes, it's described that when, as Krishna would walk through the Vrindavan forest, the trees would actually bend so that Krishna would take their fruit, because that would be the perfection of their lives, to have Krishna taste their fruits. And it's described what would be the response of the river Yamuna when she heard Krishna playing his flute. Yes, it's described that the Yamuna would actually stop flowing, stunned, listening to Krishna's flute. And so practically everyone and everything, of course there's nothing like everything, there's nothing insentient in the spiritual world. Everything is said to be sentient, conscious. And so everyone in the spiritual world has only one goal, one objective, and that is to please Krishna. That's all. There's no other desire whatsoever. Okay, so that's one hallmark of Vrindavan consciousness. What, something else? Yes, sir.
Engaging all other citizens in Krishna. Trying to make, making plans to engage other citizens in Krishna.
Okay, fine. Okay, so oneself trying to be Krishna conscious, engaging others in Krishna service. Okay, what else? Yes, sir.
Festivities.
Okay, festivals. For whom?
For Krishna's pleasure.
Yes, for Krishna's pleasure. Okay. What else? Yes, sir.
Always chanting the holy name of the Lord.
Okay, always chanting the holy names of the Lord. Yes, sir.
There is no envy, no anxiety, nothing like negative.
Yes. That's another very significant point. Thank you. The spiritual world, Vrindavan consciousness, is characterized by absence of envy. This is described in third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukdev Goswami is describing Vaikuntha when the four Kumaras went there. So there's a whole beautiful description of Vaikuntha over there in the third canto. And there is described that in the spiritual world, there are so many beautiful birds who can sing so sweetly. You can't imagine. So many birds singing, who can sing amazingly sweetly. But when the bumblebee begins to hum, is it very pleasant?
Yeah.
Bumblebee doesn't. Oh, not very wonderful sound. If a bumblebee comes near you, you like it?
No. Oh,
yeah, but a little more louder, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
Anybody like the song? But when that bumblebee sings the glories of the Lord, all the other birds who can sing so sweetly, they all become silent. They don't think, oh, this bumblebee, what irritating sound, stop it! We can sing so sweetly. No. They all keep quiet to allow the bumblebee to sing the glories of the Lord. That's one example he gives. The second example he gives is, similarly, there are so many beautiful flowers in the spiritual world. Flowers which smell so fragrantly, which looks so beautifully. You can never find such flowers here. There's no comparison. But still, all these flowers offer their respects to Tulsi. Even though, we know Tulsi's flowers. Have you seen Tulsi's flowers? Yes, the manjuris are buds, but then they bloom into small flowers. So, nothing very beautiful about those flowers. But yet, they give respect to Tulsi. Why? Yes, because she is very dear to Krishna. So that's the... So, he gives these two examples to make this point, this important point, that the spiritual world is characterized by absence of envy. And that is the hallmark of the Vrindavan consciousness. So these, we could add to the list, but these are the two main. Number one is Krishna in the center of all one's activities, and the second is absence of envy. Yes, sir. And what?
Radha. My first impression when I was in Vrindavan, everybody was saying Radha, 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 Radha. So it was more like Radha was the center
of Krishna's Radha. Yes, of course. And one says yes. Or wherever there's Krishna, there's always Radharani. She's the Nadini Shakti, the internal potency of the love. So in one sense, we cannot separate the two. So the important point is that these are two important characteristics and something which actually is quite difficult for the conditioned souls to implement. Because the conditioned souls, they always want to keep whom in the center? One sense. So one always thinks of keeping oneself in the center rather than keeping Krishna in the center. And as we saw, the root cause of material existence is envy. Iksha dvesha. Dvesha is envy. So the envy is the root cause of material existence, and that envy remains very deep rooted within the heart. But we see once again in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how the devotees of the Lord are totally free from envy. You can think of any one pastime which specifically, very vividly illustrates this point of how the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are totally free from envy. Yes, Sikhlan?
So when King Prasad Prarudra, he wanted to get the verse of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it was Gauranga's own devotees who instructed the king how to get the mercy. That he should go into the park when Mahaprabhu was resting during the Rath Yatra, dressed up as a simple mendicant, not like a king. And he should massage the Lord's lotus feet and recite the Gopi Gita. And by this way he would receive the mercy of Mahaprabhu. So the devotees were totally non-envious of King Prasadaruja. They wanted him to get the mercy, they weren't concerned about himself getting the mercy.
Yes, very good. Thank you for that. Yeah, that's a very good pastime indicating the non-envious nature of the devotee. Yes, Prabhu?
So lust, share an equal platform with envy is the root cause of material.
Well, I think that they go hand in hand, lust and envy. Because when one is envious of the Lord, what is basically lust? Lust is the enjoying mentality, trying to enjoy independent of the Lord. So because one is envious of the Lord, one is thinking, why only the Lord should enjoy? So then, I should be the enjoyer. So that's lust. So, in one sense, go hand in hand. Yes, any other pastimes illustrating this non-envious nature of the devotees? It's good to know Mahaprabhu's pastime, this is Mahaprabhu's moment. We should definitely know. Yes, Prabhu?
Gadamata, I said so.
How?
Gadamata was compassionate to
Gadamata.
So the Lord wanted to chastise kill them because of offense. But because of what was not envious of the falling soul, he begged the Lord that he should forgive him.
Okay, that's more like compassion. Of course, we can see some non-envious nature also there. But that's more illustrative of compassion, I feel. Huh?
Not in detail, but 6 to 7 examples.
always scholarly, but still they are making, who is not like tender also, but still young.
Okay, fine. Okay, the six Goswamis had nice loving relationships on a totally non-envious platform. Yes, true. One of the very classical examples, classical pastimes illustrating this non-envious nature is the Mahaprakash Leela. You all have heard of the Mahaprakash Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? How many have heard at least something about this Mahaprakash Leela? Oh, very few. It's one of the most important and the famous pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I think as Mahaprabhu's followers, we must know this pastime. And though I like to speak this pastime very elaborately, but we don't have time for that. So I just give a synopsis. So the Mahaprakash Leela, which is called as a Shat Praharya Leela, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his opulences as the Supreme Personality of Godhead for 21 hours. And so Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually was in the mood of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, and all the devotees. So he actually sat on the throne of Lord Vishnu, and all his associates, all the devotees were doing the Abhishek of the Lords, and giving so many presents, offerings, and it was a grand celebration. It's described that they were doing the Abhishek of the Lord. The Lord is actually sitting, right? Just like, I suppose, next year there's going to be the Abhishek of the Panchatattva, right? So, but you can just imagine the Lord is actually sitting there, and they're doing all that Abhishek. It's described there were hundreds and hundreds of pots of Ganges water which were brought by the devotees from the Ganges actually, and the Lord is being bathed. And that wonderful pastime took place not very far from here. Which place is that? Yes, the Srivastavan. Right? Not very far from here this pastime took place. And so, after all the bathing ceremony and offerings and so on and so forth, the Lord actually was calling each one of his devotees, reminding them of their past lives and how the Lord benedicted them and the Lord is giving blessings. And so he's calling each one by one, just like he calls Haridas Thakur, and he's telling Haridas Thakur that, my dear Haridas, even though you were born in a Mlecha family, but still such was your attachment for the holy name of the Lord that you became the Namacharya of the holy name. And when you were being beaten in those 22 marketplaces, I could not tolerate it. I was so angry that I came over there with my Sudarshan Chakra to cut the heads of the tormentors. But at that time, your compassion was so great that my Sudarshan Chakra became helpless. And so, Haridas Thakur, you are one of the greatest of all the Vaishnavas in this entire creation. Ask for some benediction. And Haridas Thakur says, what can I ask, my dear Lord? Your very presence over here is the greatest benediction in this entire creation. But still, if you want me to ask a benediction, the only benediction I ask for is, it doesn't matter even if I'm born as
a worm in stool, or as a dog. But let me be born in the house of a Vaishnava, where I can get the remnants of the Vaishnava. And in this way, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hears this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu further tells him, he tells him that when those tormentors were whipping you because I could not tolerate it, I myself descended from the spiritual worlds and covered your back with my own back so that you do not feel the pain. And Mahaprabhu removed his upper garments and he showed the marks of the lashes of the whips on his own body. Seeing this, Haridas Thakur fell to the ground weeping and crying. And Haridas Thakur was so, feeling so grateful to the Lord for what he has done. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he tells that there's no need for you to ever come in this material world again, because you are the greatest of all Vaishnavas. Anyone who even in their minds commits an offense against you, I personally will punish them. And seeing this merciful nature of the Lord on Sri Haridas Thakur, all the Vaishnavas are so blissful, so happy, that all of them loudly chant, Haribo! In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is benedicting each and every devotee, reminding them of their previous lives. He calls Kolavecha Sridhar, he calls Murari Gupta, and he shows Murari Gupta his form as Hanuman and his own form as Lord Ramachandra. And every one of the devotees, when they see the other devotee receiving that mercy of the Lord, they are so blissful. It never crosses their minds. Why is that devotee getting the Lord's mercy? Why not me? That thought never crosses their minds. And when they saw that one devotee has not got the Lord's mercy, they became very upset. Who was that?
Mukunda.
And Nityananda Prabhu himself goes to plead with the Lord, my dear Lord, Mukunda is such a wonderful devotee, why are you not giving him your mercy? And Mahaprabhu says, this Mukunda, he's a hypocrite. Sometimes he takes a blade of grass between his teeth and falls at my feet. And sometimes he takes a hammer and hits on my head. In the association of devotees, he acts very humbly. But in the association of the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, he takes their association. I cannot tolerate that. And Mukunda is listening to this. And Mukunda, he asks the devotees, please ask the Lord, when will I receive his mercy? Mahaprabhu says very greatly, only after 10 million births. Just imagine if any one of us would have heard that. Maybe we would have been greatly lamenting. But Mukunda, when he heard that, he started jumping in ecstasy. I will see the Lord after 10 million births. The Lord has given a guarantee that after 10 million births, I will definitely see Him. And seeing that quality of gratitude and patience in Mukunda, Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy that He called Him back and offered him all the blessings and benedictions. I just gave a short synopsis of this entire pastime, which is described in great details in Chaitanya Bhagavat. But the essence of it is that how the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are totally non-envious.
they are eager that everyone receives the Lord's mercy, and it brings them great distress when somebody else actually doesn't get the Lord's mercy. So this is the hallmark of the spiritual world: absence of envy. And everyone is simply geared towards serving Krishna, keeping Krishna in the center of their lives. So this is the Vrindavan consciousness which we can create wherever we are, whether we are at home, whether we are in the temple, anywhere. And this is what actually Srila Prabhupada wanted to create. Srila Prabhupada said, my centers are in Vaikuntha. Not different from Vaikuntha, but it definitely becomes our responsibility to create that Vaikuntha atmosphere, that Vrindavan consciousness, by inculcating these very important values within our own practices of devotional service. So yes, so this is an important point Srila Prabhupada is making over here in this purport. This is what is pure devotional service actually. And this pure devotional service is what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada have come to give us. And we can create that Vrindavan consciousness, not only Vrindavan, but wherever we are, in whichever place of the world, we can create that Vrindavan consciousness. And the result of creating that Vrindavan consciousness is that that place becomes so attractive that everyone would want to be there. That would be the result of creating that Vrindavan consciousness, because it does not exist in the material atmosphere. And so that's what Srila Prabhupada is writing over here, that we can create that Vrindavan consciousness anywhere and everywhere, wherever we go. That is the characteristic of pure devotional service. And then, when we do so, what will happen? That's the next verse. Let's recite the next verse again in a positive form. Mamupetya punarjanma dukkalayam ashashvatam natnuvanti mahatmana samsiddhim paramangatah. After attaining me, the great souls who are yogis and devotion never return to this temporary world which is full of miseries, because they have attained the highest perfection. Okay, so the result of that practice of devotional service is that Krishna takes them back to the spiritual worlds, and they would never have to return to this temporary world which is dukkalayam ashashvatam. Okay? And Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, I'm reading a few lines down, he says, the Mahatmas receive transcendental messages from the realized devotees and thus gradually develop devotional service and Krishna consciousness and become so absorbed in transcendental service that they no longer desire elevation to any of the material planets, nor do they even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet. They only want Krishna and Krishna's association, nothing else. That is the highest perfection of life. And in comparison to that, what happens in the material world is, the 16th verse, Abrahma Puna Loka Punar Avartina Arjuna Mahupetyatukanteya. From the highest planets in the material world down to the lowest, all are places of misery wherein repeated birth and death take place, but one who attains to my abode, O son of Kunti, never takes birth again. Okay, so Krishna is speaking about the material world, which is dukkhalayam ashashvatam. When he goes to the spiritual world, he never has to come back to this material world. What are other analogies and examples, not others, what are examples and analogies where Srila Prabhupada describes the nature of the material world? Somebody would like to quickly write? Yes, a few examples and analogies to describe the nature of the material world. What's that?
Haribol.
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 Haribol. Haribol. No, I'm asking examples and analogies. I heard Hari Bol. Good.
One example I'm sure Prabhupada gives is like the whole spiritual realm is like a city, and the government, when building a city, automatically knows to go to prison.
Mm.
It's going to be.
Okay, good. So one example is a prison. Okay, what else? What are the examples? Quick.
Like a mirage in the desert.
Okay, good. Mirage in the desert.
It's like a toilet. Pretty sure you just
get out. Okay, it's like a toilet. Okay, it's like a dream. You have to write a little faster. Dream. Yes?
And this is a perverted reflection.
Okay, perverted reflection of?
Of the spiritual world.
Of the spiritual world, good.
It's like a cloud in the spiritual sky.
Okay, a cloud in the spiritual sky. Of course, that is a cloud actually. Anything more?
Like a camel leading me to the whole cloud.
Okay, that's for material sense gratification. You put it. Okay, you can put it. That's for material sense gratification. Yes, sir.
It's like a train bogey. You're only there for a short time. You make it very nice. You finish it. You go.
Okay.
Train bogey. Train car.
Yes, some more.
Tree.
Which tree?
Inverted banyan
tree. Yes, the inverted banyan tree. Krishna himself describes this. Some others? Yes, sir.
You said that it's like a smallest calf set.
Oh, okay. The calf's hoof print.
Calf's hoof.
Okay, so of course it becomes so small when one takes to devotional service. Okay, that's the other example.
Yeah.
The vast ocean, the vast material ocean, that's the other example. Ocean is reduced to the water contained in a hoof print of a calf by taking the devotional service. So similar to the ocean, there's another example.
A deep, dark well.
Okay, fine. A deep, dark well. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Diamond.
Yes. The material world is compared to a diamond.
The light is ordinarily no shine, but when you are with Krishna, you are in glitter like diamond. The example is given here. Let me read it. When a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified. At the same time, the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity is eternally glitter. And when the living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Lord, he looks gold.
Yeah, so it's when the living in it takes to the service of the Lord.
Yeah.
Right. So here we are talking about examples of the material world, those have not taken to the service. Every morning we are chanting something.
Forest fire.
Yes, forest fire. Yes, it is a place of misery. We're looking for some examples and analogies to describe that. Okay, I think so that's a sufficient list. Of course, in regards to material sense gratification, there are a few other examples. Like Prabhupada Maharaj says, it's like scratching an itch, right? That of course refers to material sense gratification. Okay, fine, thank you. Okay, so those are some examples about the nature of the material. So here in this section, this is the section on pure devotional service from 14 to 16. Okay, so we covered this section from 14 to 16 on pure devotional service. 17 to 22 is the next section comparing the material and the spiritual world. So we'll quickly go through the section.
Question.
Okay.
Prabhupada is saying here that the Mahatma's devotee they even don't want to be transferred to any spiritual plane. Does this mean that the devotee doesn't want to be transferred to Loka Vrindavan?
What do you think? Do you want to go to the spiritual planet or no?
Yes.
So is it wrong to desire to go to the spiritual world?
No.
Then the question arises, why is Prabhupada writing here that the devotees, they do not even want to be transferred to any spiritual planet? Yes, that's correct. They're satisfying just by devotional service. And in one sense, if one is, as Prabhupada further writes, what do they want? They only want Krishna and Krishna's association and nothing else. And so therefore, what is Mahaprabhu saying in the Shikshashtakam? Yes. Mama janmani janmanishvare bhavata bhaktir ahekarupai. I do not even mind taking birth again and again in this material world. And in fact, once again in this Mahaprakash Leela, actually Murari Gupta is saying the same thing, that I do not even mind being born again, but even if I am born again, let me always remember your lotus feet. Because in that remembrance, you are always present. So the devotee, that's his desire actually, to always be given that opportunity to practice devotional service and be in the association of Vaishnavas. Even Parikshit Maharaj, very interestingly, is about to leave his body and he's praying to the assembled sages. He's saying, after this snake bird bites me, I do not know whether I will return to the spiritual world. But even if I were to take birth again in this material world, please grant me three things. Somebody knows what are those three things he's asking for? The first thing is, he says, all the remembrance of the lotus feet of the Lord. The second thing is the association of devotees. And the third thing is a friendly disposition towards all living entities. So he says, even if I were to take birth again in this material world, please grant me these three benedictions. So, but at the same time, is desiring to go to the spiritual world wrong? No. As Prabhupada explained, that just like it's just like a lost son, if a lost son desires to go back to his father's place, is there anything wrong? No, there's nothing wrong. So desiring that is not wrong, but at the same time, a devotee on a very elevated platform is also satisfied in any place if he gets the opportunity to practice devotional service, because ultimately what is most important is the remembrance of Krishna. Of course we understand that remembrance of Krishna is best practiced in the spiritual world, but if one remembers Krishna, then that's the ultimate perfection of life. And so therefore we find Chitraketu Maharaj, when he was cursed by Mother Parvati to become a demon on this earth planet, he has been practicing so many austerities and so much of devotional service in so many years to please Lord Shankarshan, and he's going to the spiritual world very soon. But now this Mother Parvati curses him to once again come on this earth planet to become a demon. But then what is the response of Maharaj Chitraketu? He's totally satisfied. Falls down at Mother Parvati's feet and says, thank you. And at that time Lord Shiva is so impressed by that, he recites this famous verse. Huh? What's the verse? Narayana para sarve na kutashana bibhyati swarga apavarga narakeshu apituliyata darshana. For the devotee of the Lord, it doesn't matter. Swarga apavarga naraka. Whether it's going to the Vaikuntha planets or the heavenly planets, or even if it's Naraka, the hell, it doesn't matter. Apituliyartha darshana, they're equipoised. Why? Narayana para sarve. Because they attach to Lord Narayana. So, that's the consciousness of a devotee. But at the same time we understand, desiring to go back to God, it is not wrong. Okay? Okay, so Okay, they say, this seems to raise some controversy, it looks like. Okay, I probably haven't been raising hands.
I just wonder, how should devotees think about when, for example, Krishna is standing before them and saying, okay, let's go to the material, to the spiritual world, and how should they think in relation to the other fallen souls who are there still in the material world? What should they think? I mean, if you're in material, how can you feel nicely if there are so many people suffering in the material world?
So what would you do? If the Vaikuntha airplane just descended in front of you and the Vaikuntha Dutas are inviting you back to the spiritual world, what would you do?
I mean, I personally, I have a feeling that I wouldn't feel very nice in Vaikuntha.
Uh-huh. Okay, so
but
what would you do?
But at the same time, I don't have the same qualification as Murari Gupta, for example, who is defined to go anywhere and just sacrifice himself. Uh-huh.
Of course, definitely, when you're qualified, then the Vaikuntha airplane will come. You understand the point? So that's not your prerogative to know whether you're qualified or not. When you're qualified, only the plane will come.
But I mean, I'm not qualified to stay and save the soul. You know, that's what I'm not qualified. But Murari Gupta was so humble that, you know, and that he could, you know, sacrifice
all his life, all his. So, how should we think about,
you know, should we go or
should
we stay?
Ananta Prabhu has a solution. Okay, somebody would like to add to that answer? Somebody would like to say something? Yes?
A few months ago, I was in London, London, so. I was staying there in Amacharya with Mahavishnu Swami. And I actually asked exactly the same question to him. I was asking, Maharaj, aren't you sometimes afraid, like, you're doing all this work for your disciples? What if some disciples. I just heard that quote that week, that when a disciple is not performing, following the rigorous principles properly, then actually the guru gets sanctified for that, like it limits him from transcending to the spiritual world. Is that so? I said, what's your opinion about this? And he said, I don't want to go to the spiritual world. What am I going to do there? There's no preaching word there. I'm going to get totally bored.
That is called as Bhava Ananda. You know that master? How Bhavananda Prabhu got that name? So he got that name and then, so he asked Prabhupada, now what is the meaning of Bhava Ananda? Bhava Ananda means basically happiness of the material world. So where is there happiness in the material world? So Prabhupada said, there's only one happiness in the material world. Now what's that? Preaching. That's the happiness of the material world, is in preaching the glories of Krishna. That's the only happiness of the material world. And that preaching is not there in the spiritual world. So that's the explanation Prabhupada gives to the one for what's the meaning of Bhava Ananda. So of course, regarding this question, definitely of course, if the Vaikuntha airplane comes, what do you think? Would you go? Hitler proof?
So.
And what would you decide? Somebody else had some other opinions on that? One last one.
In Bhagavatam, he said that when Vaikuntha airplane came to Fort Dhruva, he take a bag, put the seal, put the new dhoti, chadar, and
Yes. You'll follow in his footsteps. You'll follow in his footsteps. You'll see. What if it comes right now? You may not have so much time to think.
Another question.
We are on the same discussion. Okay, anyway, okay, fine. So the point is, yes, as far as the other conditions also are concerned, if we are really concerned about their deliverance, then we can definitely pray for them, right, in the perfected stage. We can definitely pray to the Lord for them if we are really so concerned about delivering the other conditioned souls, as Prahlad Maharaj said. Prahlad Maharaj is saying in his prayers, I do not want to go to Vaikuntha, leaving all these fools and rascals rotting in the material world. I want to be in the cities, preaching. That's what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. Right. So yes, an elevated devotee of the Lord has the consciousness, but at the same time, if one is actually getting a chance to go back to the spiritual world, which is the ultimate perfection of life, definitely, I mean, why would one not take the chance? Because ultimately that's the ultimate perfection. And as far as the other conditions also concerned, one could definitely pray to the Lord for their deliverance as well. Right. Huh?
I heard another opinion that when you go to the spiritual world and serve Krishna, by making Krishna happy, actually all living beings are benefited by that as well. I'm not sure how.
The point is very well illustrated in this pastime of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The pastime of Mahaprabhu with the Vasudev, who he was saying that, my dear Lord, let me take all the sinful reactions of all the living entities and let me suffer for that. And let all the other living entities go back to the spiritual world. What did Mahaprabhu say? Mahaprabhu said, Vasudev, for you, I can nullify the sinful reactions of all conditioned living entities and I can send them, all of them, back to the spiritual world. And you also don't have to suffer for them. Lord said, what is one universe? If one universe becomes bereft of living entities, what's the great deal? One universe is like a small mustard seed in a huge bag of mustard seeds. So if one universe becomes bereft of living entities and everyone goes back to the spiritual world, that was Mahaprabhu's answer. So, if the devotee in the perfected stage actually desires the deliverance of the living entities, yes. If the Lord is so pleased, the Lord can deliver all the living entities and the devotee does not even have to suffer for that. Right? Okay, fine. Okay, so, some more questions? Okay, I'm stopping all questions at exactly 11:30. Okay, so we have 3 minutes. Well, fits it. Okay, we go in line. Okay, fine. You.
What's the biggest point is to say when I get on the plane
tomorrow? About the plane?
Yeah.
No problem. The plane has been taken off.
Did I miss the flight?
No, you're on the flight.
What's the difference between devotee wanting Krishna's association and one of the five paths of liberation desiring personal association?
Of course, the five types of liberation: Salokya, Sarishti, Samipya, and Sarupya. Right? These are the four types of personal liberation. The fifth one is the impersonal liberation, Sayujya, which surely nobody is interested in. But the four types of liberation, there's a verse in the third canto which actually says that the devotee actually even does not desire these four types of liberation also. Because if that liberation, the, even these four types of liberation, if they are bereft of the Lord's service, then the Vaishnava doesn't want that. Because what the Vaishnava considers most important is the Lord's service. That is what he considers to be most important. So if being on the same planet as the Lord, or having the same form of the Lord, or having the same opulence of the Lord, if all that is bereft of the Lord's service, then a devotee doesn't want that. Right? So that's what the devotee considers most important. We're coming to it after this.
So you said about Vaikuntha consciousness.
Mm.
So my question was, as you stated the example of Mahaprakash Leela, so the devotees over there, they were all associates of Mahaprabhu. So they are already pure. So by exhibiting their pastimes and seeing personally for myself what I can say about envy, how to overcome practically with, on the practical basis. That is like they are all in pure state. So that is the exhibition of the pure devotees, they are pure.
Okay.
For my state, like envy, and as it has been stated, like these are six enemies, and whatever, this cannot be dovetailed, I think so.
Yes.
So
no, that's right.
How to practically start with?
Okay.
Like
okay.
Equals, we can say. Like
how to get rid of envy? Quick, some few thoughts on that. Yes, Adi Krishna.
Just by hearing this pastime, not different from hearing Krishna's pastime. So Krishna's pastime clears the heart from all the anandas.
Yes, that's right. Thank you. Yes, hearing Krishna katha, shrimatam nashta prayesha abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. All the abhadras will get cleared by hearing the pastimes of the Lord. Yes, Prabhu. Okay, serving the devotees.
Glorifying
devotees, very modern. Glorifying devotees, that's a very powerful way of getting rid of envy. Because in the envious state, what do? Yes, we criticize devotees. When we are envious, we criticize. So want to get rid of that critical mentality, then we have to learn to glorify them. See the good qualities. If we see the good qualities, then we can get rid of the criticizing mentality and the envy. What else? Yes, ma'am.
Serve
the devotees.
Understanding the rarity of devotees.
Okay, understanding the rarity of devotees.
Everyone said this, a sort of contemplation, you can think this person has envy is almost like thinking,
when we're envious of somebody, we think that that person's stolen my happiness, that person's stolen my fame, that person's stolen my position. So if we think that person's not a thief of my own happiness, you know,
okay, fine. Yes, Mr.
Of course, when a devotee is behaving very badly, and we criticize them. When a devotee is behaving very badly and we criticize that devotee, are we envious of his bad behavior?
Are we envious?
Of his bad behavior. Because we're envious if we criticize him. But if he's behaving very badly, does that make us envious of his bad behavior?
It depends on our own consciousness. What is the consciousness while criticizing? So one could criticize or find faults with someone with an attitude to try and help him, or one could do so with an envious mentality. So that's one's own free will. Yeah. So, and another important, in addition to all the answers that have been rightly said, another important point is to understand the perfect hands of everything. And whatever the Lord does is perfect, understanding this point. See, usually the envy arises when we think that, okay, somebody is excelling me in something. Right? Usually that becomes the cause of envy. Somebody is better than me in something, one becomes envious of the other person. But then when we understand that, yes, okay, somebody may be better than me, but who is responsible for that? Krishna. So who am I to complain about what Krishna has done? Somebody is singing better than me, somebody is playing mridang better than me, somebody is preaching better than me. But who has made them better? Who has given them those qualities? Krishna has given. So if I'm envying that person, actually whom am I envying? I'm envying Krishna. Right? And that's the root cause of material existence. So therefore, understanding all these philosophical points and trying to purify the heart is what will help us get rid of the envy. Going ahead. to the next section, 17 to 22, comparing the material and the spiritual world.
One important question. We have it in the last year on India. I wanted to ask, but so is there anything that positive, like envy in the spiritual world, or there is a competition that you can compete positively?
Yeah, that's called a healthy competition, which is free from envy. And that healthy competition only encourages each other in the service to Krishna. There, in that healthy competition, Krishna is in the center and we are competing to serve Krishna better. The competition is not to make oneself more glorious. That's the difference. The difference between healthy competition and unhealthy competition is who is in the center. That is what makes the difference.
So envy also can be used in the service.
No, we don't call that envy. There is no envy. There is no envy. In healthy competition, there is no envy. That's all. There is no question of dovetailing envy. Okay, fine. 17th verse. Prabhupada often quoted this, at least the first part of this verse, Prabhupada often quoted. Let's recite it. Sahasra yuga paryantam aharyat brahmano vidu rastram yuga sahasratam teho rastra vidu janaha. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day, and such also is the duration of his night. And Prabhupada goes into whole detailed calculation of what is Brahma's day and what is Brahma's night, which you can read, but you must know. Okay, and 18th verse, Krishna is saying, at the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state, and thereafter when the night falls, they are merged into the unmanifest again. 19th verse. This also Prabhupada often quoted this part actually. Bhutva bhutva praliyate. Prabhupada would often quote this to indicate the temporary nature of material existence. Again and again when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helpless, annihilated. Okay. So this is these three verses, 17, 18 and 19 are describing about the temporary nature of the material world, how there's creation, destruction. And the 20th verse is saying, Parastasmātu bhāvanyo vyakto vyakta sanātanaha yasa sarveshu bhūteshu nashyatsu na vinashyati. Yet there is another unmanifest nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all of this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. Okay? Nashyatsu na vinashyati. So, maybe you can just latch it. Okay, so that spiritual world, in comparison to this material world, which is created, annihilated, the spiritual world is never annihilated. 21st verse says, that which the Vedantas describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place from which having attained it one never returns, that is my supreme abode. And Prabhupada is describing the spiritual world from the Brahma Samhita. Okay. And the 22nd verse, the supreme personality of Godhead who is greater than all is attainable by unalloyed devotion. Although he is present in his abode, he is all-pervading and everything is situated within him. Okay, so in this way this section compares the material world and the spiritual world, how the material worlds are temporary, there's creation, destruction, but the spiritual world is never destroyed. It's eternal.
Right. Unmanifest is used to describe the spiritual world sometimes, and then the living entities also become unmanifest and they are in the body of Mahavishnu. How
do we understand which is the real unmanifest thing? Are you referring to the spiritual thing or? Whatever is spiritual is in one sense always becomes unmanifest. Why it said unmanifest is because it's not destroyed, but it becomes unmanifest means it's no longer visible, right? So the living entities, they are eternal. Maivamsu jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. So they are eternal. So they just enter into the body of Mahavishnu at the end of Brahma's day. right, at the end of Brahma's life. So, but it's not that they're destroyed, so therefore it's an unmanifest.
Krishna takes throne. He said that in the first 10,000 years of the Kali Yuga, it was in the golden period, golden age.
Okay.
And then after 10,000 years, it will be very difficult for everything.
Yes.
People will kill people.
Yes.
Even to be a devotee will not be easy.
Correct.
So how to manage in this way if we are a devotee? Just to, you know, to maintain to stay a devotee.
Best is to go back to God as in this life. That's what Prabhupada said. Go, just finish your business in this one life. Why are you thinking about that time? Coming back when the golden period of Mahaprabhu is not there? Why think of that?
But in fact, about this 10,000 years, it's even just 5,000 years
now. No, it's not. It's 500. Mahaprabhu's movements are 500 years back.
Okay. Okay. For this 10,000 years,
yes.
5,000 years.
What's that? Yeah. Okay. Okay, we're going to the last section of this chapter. And that is 23 to 28, the supremacy of devotion in attaining the supreme. Sorry. Okay, so now here Krishna is describing about how different transcendentalists, they leave this material world, how the different paths by which they leave, and how the devotees, they don't have to really bother about these paths. Okay, and Prabhupada makes that right clear right in the beginning. 23rd verse. O best of the Bhartas, I shall now explain to you the different times at which passing away from this world, the yogi does or does not come back. Okay, and Prabhupada, right in the beginning of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the unalloyed devotees of the Supreme Lord who are totally surrendered souls, note that, totally surrendered souls, do not care when they leave their bodies or by what method, they leave everything in Krishna's hands and so easily and happily return to Godhead. Right? So, you see, Prabhupada is so confident about the process of devotional service that if one simply becomes a pure devotee, totally surrendered devotee, easily and happily one can go back to Godhead. And one doesn't really have to bother about which time one leaves the body. So, by making that statement right in the beginning, actually Prabhupada is making the whole discussion of the rest of the section quite irrelevant actually for us. But still we will go through because Krishna is speaking about it. And Krishna is speaking about it so that we understand the superiority of devotion. That's the reason why Krishna is describing this. So the yogis have to take all that trouble to decide when to leave, what is auspicious, what is inauspicious time. They have to decide all that. But the devotee really doesn't have to bother about all those because Krishna is in full control of the devotee. That's the glory of devotional service. 24th verse. Those who know the Supreme Brahman attain that Supreme by passing away from the world during the influence of the fiery God in the light at an auspicious moment of the day, during the fortnight of the waxing moon, or during the 6 months when the sun travels in the north. Okay, so this is said to be the auspicious time. When if one leaves the body during this time, then they attain the Supreme. Right, it could be the Supreme Brahman or maybe even the spiritual world. But the point is that this is said to be the auspicious time. This path is called as Devayana. Okay, there's two paths. So Devayana and Pitrayana. So the 24th verse is describing Devayana and the 25th verse is describing Pitrayana. Pitrayana means basically the heavenly planets. So the 25th verse says, the mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the fortnight of the waning moon, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, reaches the moon planet, but again comes back. So obviously one goes to the heavenly planets, one has to come back to the material world, I mean to the earth planet again. So that's why that's called as the Pitruyana. Okay. And so the 24th verse especially is in reference to the jnanis and the yogis who usually attain the Supreme Brahman by leaving the body during that auspicious time. and the 25th verse is for especially karmakandis and things, and people like that who perform some pious activities go to the heavenly planets and they have to come back. So that's why that's called as Pitriyana. Okay. And 26th verse, according to the Vedic opinion, there are two ways of passing from this world, one in light and one in darkness. When one passes in light, he does not come back, but when one passes in darkness, he returns. And 27th verse says, although the devotees know these two paths of origina, they are never bewildered. Therefore, be always fixed in devotion. And Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, third line, a devotee of the Supreme Lord should not worry whether he will depart by arrangement or by accident. The devotee should be firmly established in Krishna consciousness and chant Hare Krishna. He should know that concern over either of these two paths is troublesome. The best way to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness is to be always devoted in his service. And this will make one's path to the spiritual kingdom safe, certain and direct. Safe, certain and direct. And 28th verse, a person who accepts the path of devotional service is not bereft of the results derived from studying the Vedas, performing sacrifices, undergoing austerities, giving charity or pursuing philosophical and fruitive activities. Simply by performing devotional service, he attains all these, right? He attains the results of all this charity and this and that. He attains the results of all of that. And at the end, he reaches the supreme eternal abode. Okay, so that's the end of our discussions on the 8th chapter and we are proceeding to the 9th chapter now. Okay, so the 9th chapter is one of the most important chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, because as we said, in the whole Bhagavad Gita, the middle 6 chapters are the most important and the 9th and the 10th chapters are the middle of the middle. So therefore they are very important. So the 9th chapter especially is a very, very important chapter describing the glories of devotional service. Has 5 sections. Okay, so we'll try and discuss 2 sections today. So first, 1 to 3 is the first section. Hearing about Krishna, qualifications and disqualifications. So let's recite the first verse, 9th chapter, entitled The Most Confidential Knowledge. First verse. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Idam Dute Guyyatamam Pravakshyam Yanasuyave Jnanam Vijnana Sahitam Yajnyatva Mokshate Shubhat. The Supreme Personality of God has said, my dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Okay, so here Krishna is telling Arjuna, I am giving this knowledge to you because you are not envious. Anasuyave. So we had a whole discussion on this envy. And so that becomes one of the qualifications for actually understanding the messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the reason why Krishna is saying, I am giving this knowledge to you. And it's most confidential knowledge. Okay, these are a few important lines from the purport. Someone can please read this.
The word idam jnanam, this knowledge, refers to pure devotional service, which consists of 9 different activities: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything. By the practice of these 9 elements of devotional service, one is elevated to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. The Sanskrit word anasuyave in this verse is also very significant. Generally, the commentators, even if they are highly scholarly, are all envious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the most erudite scholars write on Bhagavad Gita very inaccurately. Because they are envious of Krishna, their commentaries are useless. the commentaries given by devotees of the Lord are bona fide.
So Prabhupada spoke as speaking of this anasuya way. How people are envious, so the commentaries are useless. Okay, and this is Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentary on this first verse. Somebody else confused with that.
The majestic aspect of the Lord is adopting the worship suitable for his servants, and the excellence of that pure devotees are described clearly in the ninth chapter. Bhakti is superior to karma, dhyana, yoga and other philosophy. As described in the seventh chapter, such bhakti is either pradani bhuta or kevala. And among the types of bhakti, the supreme position of kevala bhakti, which is extremely powerful, not dependent on purity of heart or other elements like jnana, has clearly been shown.
Right, so the ninth chapter is especially describing only kevala bhakti, shuddha bhakti, that's all. Right, the Lord has already described mixed devotional service. In the 7th chapter he has described Karma Mishra Bhakti, Jnana Mishra Bhakti. In the 8th chapter he has described Yoga Mishra Bhakti and Shuddha Bhakti. And the 9th chapter is describing only Shuddha Bhakti or Kevala Bhakti. Now go ahead.
The 9th chapter begins to speak about the powers of the Lord required to acknowledge in order to perform the pure Bhakti, Kevala Bhakti. The Gita is the essence of all scriptures, and essence of the Gita is the middle 6 chapters. The middle of those 6 chapters, the 9th and 10th chapters, is the further essence of these 6 chapters. In 3 verses, the Lord praises what he will be describing in the chapter. The jnana, which gives liberation, described in the 2nd, 3rd and other chapters, is bhukhya, the secret. The knowledge which are revealed in the 7th and 8th chapters, which is suitable for attainment of me, the method of knowledge, bhakti, by which Bhagavan is known,
Guhyatara. Okay, so the jnana which is described in the first 6 chapters, which is essentially Atma jnana, knowledge of the soul, that is called as Guhya jnana. The knowledge that is described in the 7th and 8th chapters, which is mostly like mixed devotional services, Guhyatara jnana, more confidential. Go ahead.
In this chapter I will speak to you knowledge about Shiva or Sudabhati, which is by far
Guhyatama, most secret. Okay, so the 9th chapter is describing Guhyatam Jnana, the most secret. Okay?
Jnana is defined as that by which something is known. Thus, Bhakti is called Jnana, since by Bhakti, Bhagavan is known. By the word Jnana or knowledge, one should understand that it means only Bhakti, not the well-known Jnana mentioned in the first 6 chapters. In the second verse, by using the adjective Avaya, Avyayam, or indestructible, it must be understood that this knowledge is beyond the gunas. It is bhakti which is beyond the gunas, not the jnana mentioned earlier, which is in the sattva guna. In verse 3, the...
Okay, just a second. So here, so this point is very important to note. So the jnana which is described in the first 6 chapters is atma jnana, that is sattva guna jnana. Okay? But now, the jnana that is being described over here in this chapter is on the transcendental platform, it's beyond the gunas, it's gunatit. Okay, it's beyond sattva guna. So why? Because this is jnana about the Supreme Lord Himself. So this point is very important to understand, that this jnana which the Lord Himself is giving, the Lord Himself is speaking about His own glories, especially in the 7th and 9th chapters. And why He's speaking this knowledge? Because this actually helps bhakti. So we should not understand. Sometimes devotees think, oh, in Krishna consciousness, just chant the holy names, chant and be happy. That's all what's required. Why all this study? Baldev Vati Bhushan gives a very nice example. He says, this knowledge about the Lord's opulences is like a catalyst in understanding the Supreme. You know what's a catalyst?
The chemical that makes the reaction happen faster.
Exactly, right? So in chemistry we understand a catalyst is a substance which increases the speed of a chemical reaction. So similarly, this jnana helps us increase our devotion to the Lord. Why? Because when we know that a person is great, it helps us to actually surrender. Right? You know that somebody is great, somebody is so opulent, then automatically one's respect for that person increases. Right? Just imagine if some person were to walk into this room and sit behind, he would not care much. But if after some time, if he knew that, say he is the president of India, of course he would not just walk in like that, but anyway, just for imagination. So, but if he knew that he was the president of India, then you know, the entire attitude automatically changes. So similarly, if we know how great a person is, then our respect, and from that respect, one's love, one's devotion increases. And that's the reason why Baldeva Devushan says that this knowledge is like a catalyst which increases one's devotion to the Supreme Lord. It increases that bhakti. Okay, please go ahead.
In Sanskrit, the word dharma means only bhakti as well. I will teach this most secret bhakti to you, to one who is not hostile or selfish.
Anasuya.
This indicates that there is a rule that bhakti should only be taught to one who is not selfish or inimical. I will teach you this bhakti, jnana, culminating in direct realization of me, jnana sahitam, by which you will be freed from rebirth or freed from all obstacles to bhakti.
Okay, fine. Okay, this is Prabhupada's lecture on this verse. Somebody else, please.
Jnana is this knowledge, most confident knowledge, is not sensitive. Jnana is silent. Just like the scientific knowledge, you must know theoretically and practically. Not only that, you simply know that so much oxygen, so much hydrogen produces water by mixing. That is theoretical. You have to make water by mixing these two chemicals. That is practical. Jnana means theoretical knowledge, and vijnana means practical knowledge. So we have to do it practically. Not that I have read about the Gita, so I have to go and devote it. No. You should practically demonstrate in your life that you are actually devoted.
Okay, so jnana, vijnana, sahitam, they have to be both. There has to be the theoretical knowledge as well as the practical application. Then we will actually be able to understand the Supreme Lord. Okay, before we go to 9.2. Okay, let's recite the verse and read the translation. Raja vidya raja duryam pavitram inahuttamam Pratyakshavatamam. This knowledge is the king of education, the most secret of all secrets. It is the purest knowledge, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is the perfection of religion. It is everlasting and it is joyfully performed. Krishna, in his own words, is glorifying this king of all knowledge, Raja Vidya. This knowledge about himself, he himself is glorifying and describing its wonderful effects. So, okay, so what we're going to quickly do within the next 5 minutes is divide this class into 6 groups. Okay, so chant. No. Chaitanya. Nityananda. Advaita. Gadadhar. Srivas. Gaura Bhakta. Go ahead.
Vrunda.
Chaitanya.
Nityananda.
Advaita.
Gadadhar.
Gaura Bhakta. Chaitanya. Nityananda.
Gadadhar.
Srivad. Gaur Bhakta. Chaitanya. Hari Hari. Hari Bhav.
Ayur.
Nityananda. Advaita. Gadadhar. Srivad. Gaur Bhakta. Chaitanya. Nityananda. Advaita. Gadadhar. Okay, fine. So get into your groups quickly. Quickly get into your groups. Okay, so here Chaitanya is here. Chaitanya, Nityananda, Advaita, Nadadhar, Srivas, Gaur Bhakta there. Chaitanya, Nityananda, Advaita, Gadadhar, Srivas, and Gaura Bhakta there.
Advaita.
Can you quickly be in your groups? You can sit down. Or you can take chairs, whatever is comfortable. Who's here? Chaitanya. Who's Chaitanya? Four of you? Okay, who's here? Nityananda. Okay, sit down for just a few minutes. Sit. Yeah, which group? Chaitanya. Chaitanya, form a circle or something like that. Okay, this is Nityananda. That is? Gaur Bhakta. That is? Advaita and? Gadadhar. Who's here?
Srivas.
Okay, where are you?
Nityananda.
Where is Nityananda? This is Srivas, huh? Nityananda, is only three of you? Okay, he's there. Okay, fine. Okay, so what we're going to do is, see, there are six aspects of this verse. Alright, six aspects of this verse, okay? Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram Idam Uttamam, Pratyakshavagamam, Dharmyam, and Susukam Kartum Avyayam. Okay? So I'll be allotting one topic to each of the groups, and you have to explain that particular aspect along with maybe some Shastric examples and whatever further elaboration. First of all, of course, based on what Srila Prabhupada has given, first of all you describe what Srila Prabhupada has given with his purport, and then further understanding what you have based on some other Shastras and things like that, you can add to that understanding. Excuse me? No, surely not. that would be like Brahma's day. So okay, I'm just going to allow the topics.
There are five here, there are five there.
And this four, we have four.
Five.
Five and four. Okay, it's all right. Okay. So Rajavidya, who's going to describe Rajavidya? No. So Rajavidya you do. Okay? You do Rajavidya, then you can do Rajaguhyam. Okay? And Eklavya's Prabhu's group, you do Pavitram Idam Uttamam. Okay. And then Nityananda Prabhu, your group can do this Pratyaksha Vagamam. Okay. And you can do Dharmyam. And you can do Susukam Karkam Amyayam. Okay, fine. So now we are resuming class again at 12:25. So 12:25 is preparation time plus break time. How you want to use it is up to you. We're starting class again at 12:25, which includes your break time. Okay?
We have to describe what it means.
Yes, you have to describe what means, your understanding, and you want to give some other Shastric references, Shastric examples. And please note down important points on a chart paper. Please take a chart paper and some pen and jot down your important points on the chart paper. Okay, so the important points are, your attention please, just for a second, your attention please, Hare Krishna, your attention please. So first of all, you describe what it is, what is meant by that particular term,
secondly, you know, how do we practice it? Thirdly, what are the effects? And fourthly, other Shastric references and examples. Okay, the first is what is it? What is that particular term? Second is how to practice it. Third is what are the effects? And fourth is other Shastric references and examples. Okay, is it clear? Okay, Hare Krishna. Okay, so we give you time till 12:30. Okay, till 12:30 time is yours. Hare Krishna. Please write down your points on a chart paper along with that. Hare Krishna. Any questions on that question? Okay, fine. Hare Krishna.
If we can like